The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Bemis, and Matt Enders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 89.
Super Moon 2.
Super
the
Moon.
The sequel. And actually, Matt, you were sharing a little something about this year's
yes.
Super Moon.
This Super Moon.
This is our science lesson before we get started.
Yeah, before we get started. This Super Moon instead of it being an annual Super Moon, it is a once in a decade Super Moon. Because what happens is the full moon coincides perfectly with the moon at its perigee.
Wow. What are the chances?
One in ten years.
You know, right after I said that, I...
What is the moon's perigee?
I don't know. It's
where it's closest to the Earth.
Yeah. Apogee is where it's the
farthest from the Earth.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, if you're talking about the sun, it's perihelion and aphelion.
Because it's the sun.
Yeah. As in helios, which is the Greek word for sun.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's enough
or
of that science.
Ken Stark's handle.
Can you...
That's right.
Can you pass me the creamer?
Yes, I will.
Are you done with it?
I am.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think while you're preparing your coffee there, we'll kind of catch up on like open source activities we did. And then perhaps this week we'll have a tale from the data center.
A tale from the data center?
Yeah. Will we?
No.
All right.
These nights, there's nothing happening. There's no more tales from the data center probably as long as I'm on nights.
Mm-hmm.
Unless something blows up. And then I don't know.
I'm surprised you haven't gotten in trouble at work for tales from the data center.
Nobody at work listens except Eric.
Oh, and he doesn't care?
Louis, no.
Friend of the show. All right.
So anyway. The only thing I have is, last night I started an rsync, so I got to sit there and watch files sync. It was tremendously
fun.
How
many files? Just
thousands.
Okay. You're talking like multi-gigabytes of...
Oh, yeah. Like...
An exabyte?
250 gigs.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
How big is your Dropbox account? No, just kidding.
Yeah, right. No, because they're getting bigger drives. They're moving from a 292 capacity to a 598 capacity drives.
Oh, that's, it's a lot of files.
Yep.
That's almost kind of like what I was doing.
And what was that, Tony?
I had to reinstall my system, the one we use for Hangout and everything. That's why it took a few extra minutes this morning I had to go through. Well, what happened, the OS drive died, which was an old 20 gig drive. So I moved it over to my other drive. I have an 80 gig SATA drive that I have Windows 7 and now Mint dual booting on the same drive. Mm-hmm. So it's repartitioned and everything, and that worked great. And then I decided I wanted to take out my home drive and replace it with a 2 terabyte drive. So that was going from a 200 gig to a 2 terabyte. I was copying all that stuff over and then copying my stuff from my external drive onto it. So that was almost an all-day process yesterday.
Were you doing
files.
A VRSync?
No, I did it just CP. I had root do CP, and then I used RVU. So R is recursive, V is verbose, so I can see it doing.
Yeah,
and
which is good.
U is update. So it only copies files that have changed.
Oh, okay. Oh, that'll do the trick.
Yeah, because it was my backup drive, the 2 terabyte I'm moving to now or I'm now using, and so most of the files were already there. I just wanted the new files copied over, so
sure.
The U did it for me.
Carl brings up my rsync. The first time I ever tried to do an rsync, this was years and years ago.
Oh!
So
we do have a Tales... No, not a Tales from the Data
right,
Center,
right, right.
But...
So. Anyway, the first time I tried to do an rsync, this was years and years ago, and it was for a client to do a backup to an internal drive. But I had the drive that it was backing up to mounted under root, and I was backing up root recursively.
Oh, yeah.
So it just filled up everything and locked
that,
up the machine.
I didn't mean to laugh.
Yes, you did.
All right. Okay, so, that sounds like it kept you busy yesterday anyway.
Yeah. It actually was an all-week process trying to get everything copied over, and then I decided to merge all my config files from my laptop, mm-hmm. which I had just reloaded, you know, 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and then this one and my old computer. So now I have settings from both, and and it's actually because I merged them. I chose and picked. I pick and choose just the exact ones. I didn't just copy everything over.
Mm-hmm.
It actually worked great, and
now that's
I have.
Good.
I really have a system that I'm going to like using. Where previously it was,
you had a system. It
was like old and clunky. And
oh, okay. It was a chore.
Well, I had installed it. The only fresh install I've done on it mm-hmm. was a 9.10 install, and then everything past that, Ubuntu 9.10. So that was like October of 2009, and every I think four installs past that have been upgrades. So there's a lot of old stuff that I want to get rid of,
mm-hmm.
and this was a perfect opportunity to do it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes out of desperation and catastrophe, you know, just like a rebirth.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what we're expecting in Detroit. But anyway.
I think we've been waiting a long time for that.
Yeah.
But what I did this week, actually there's a couple things. We tried to get the RetroShare test up and running, but we're going to wait till next week, I think, to really do that.
Well, do you really think we should waste our time with it? Because it just seems like I'm having problems with it because it's not in Fedora. Mm-hmm. And then when you add the repository, they have a Fedora 18 repository, but then when you add the repository,
mm-hmm.
there's a libupnp conflict because it requires this really old libupnp that anybody with VLC or other stuff that uses the current libupnp.
See, what I don't understand is why I was just able to install it without a problem,
well,
and I've got VLC.
You're running crappy Kubuntu. They're probably using one that relies on the older.
Is that crappy with a K?
Yeah. You know, it probably requires the older libupnp. Fedora is very cutting edge. Like my kernel,
mm-hmm.
the most recent 3.9 kernel is 3.96, and my kernel is 3.95.
Mm-hmm.
So it's.
Okay.
You
well,
know,
I know. I think Brent, who listens to the show, is up for testing, and I got an email from him, and I think he maybe
but
he's in the
anyway,
chat. He's
the
actually in the chat
it,
right
I,
now, I think.
Not that but, I don't think it's cool. I think the technology is really very cool for it.
It's just a whole environment.
Oh, yeah.
You
it's
know,
really
forum.
Cool.
I mean,
really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's too limited in its
right.
scope. Not
well,
enough people can use it. I mean, this isn't the Kubuntu show.
No, it's not. But I have it in my plans. Just kidding. All right, well, we'll see. It could be 32-bit versus 64-bit. Are you running 64-bit?
I am, and that's where I tried to do it with a VM, and I just, by habit, installed Debian 64-bit, mm-hmm. and then the only one they have for Debian is a 32-bit.
Yeah, so. All
you know,
right.
That's
well,
what
think,
it sounded like. Because who are you, Brent? You're
yeah. He sent me. He sent
with?
Me
yeah.
the key. But there's and two lines that he's gonna. I just emailed him this morning. He's gonna send me the other two lines.
I would have
lines.
Not included those two lines too, because they're after where it says end of key.
Right, but the thing of it is in order to communicate within the RetroSphere
right.
community, I think you need
right.
those.
But I'm telling you, I would have not sent those two lines.
I know, and when I first tried to put it in place, I didn't either. And then I got an error. So then I thought, well, I'm putting the whole thing in, and then it worked. So I think, and that's only because I think it needs to know what port it's coming in. It's
right.
a very high port. Blah blah blah. So anyway, so that's something that I think I'm still going to try to run that test this next week. The other thing I did. Not strictly open source, but we got our community association website went live on Friday, so I was very happy about
Woo-hoo!
That.
Cool.
A lot of work went into that. And what else? You know, just kind of doing show prep and all that. So that pretty much sums it up for me. So
cool.
I guess,
so do you have a link for your community website?
Yeah, it's. I'll type it in. It's UDC. aonline.com.
Do you go? You know, Matt and I did. Webpage is not available.
What?
Reload.
What webpage is
Reload
not
it.
Available?
Is it
UDCA.
Online.
Online.com. There it goes.
Maybe it's somebody's
Excuse
connection
me.
Speed.
Yeah, it could be. But here's the thing about it. I almost forgot to mention this. Because the domain is hosted, I ended up putting it with 1&1 because I couldn't do it with the company where the site has been built. they're not set up.
They don't sell
domains? No, because they're not set up to accept transfers yet.
What?
Well, I know, but keep in mind, the site that I use is a dumbed down, and I only say that in the background, it's dumbed down, so that people who are not versed in web, you know, web development or web site maintenance can use it. It's very simplistic, but when you take a look at it, it looks, you know, pretty nice. So what I ended up doing is I had to get an MX record, you know, for the email, because they're separate. I ended up having to have the
whoever
DNS
owns
server.
The IP, right? The DNS servers point at it, but then whoever owns the IP has to set up the RDNS.
Mm-hmm. So. Exactly. So then I had to get that over to, or I had to put that in place on the other on the other location. So I had never done that before, and I'm familiar with what MX records are. I'm familiar with all, I mean, just in terms of hearing about it, but I've never really had to do it. So I will say that it was a good technical lesson and experience for me as far as learning, but I didn't write it. They wrote it.
Yeah, because you know, we have to do that all the time.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so that was a little...
Because people will use our IPs because they'll be with us.
Yeah.
But then their actual registrar is someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So we control their RDNS, but their actual registrar controls their DNS. So.
Yeah, I was a little confused at first when they said, oh, blah, blah, blah. They said something about your hoster and your DNS. I don't know. They were going on about it. And I just thought, well, I'm just going to plug through this and just see if this works. And it did. So
cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said when I was done.
I think it does look pretty nice. I think you guys did a good job.
Oh, thanks. And that garden there at the top is in my backyard.
Is that your garden? I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, it is. And then the house that you see there, that's the house I was at last night for a party. So, but I think we're getting off topic. So
a little bit.
A little bit. So we're going to move on. So, but anyway, but thanks for your comments about it.
Yeah.
Okay. What do we got
up? Coming up, the Colonel News,
Colonel News, yeah.
That's right.
So, all right.
Well, wait, Matt. Before you get started,
yes.
Before we get to that segment, I want to make a comment about you. Last week, I think you were very proud about your Linux beard. And so he shows
for
up.
Linuxbeard.com.
Those of you who are not going to see the YouTube video portion and are only listening to the audio, Matt has shown up this week severely well trimmed.
Yes.
So are they going to revoke your membership in
Linuxbeard?
They're
not. I'm not going to tell them. I'm not going to submit a new picture to Linuxbeard.com.
You hardly have a beard.
I know. It's because once in a while I just break out the clippers and I buzz my face and I buzz my head.
Yeah.
Because the head's way short too now.
Yes, it is.
So I buzz the head and I buzz the face and then I'll let it all grow again.
Okay.
And then I'll buzz the head and buzz the face.
All right. I just had to say that. So.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay.
But no, don't tell Linuxbeard.com.
I won't.
We don't want it to revoke my membership.
Okay.
So.
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
We did have a release candidate on Saturday, 22nd of June, 2013, at 11:04 Hawaii Standard Time. Because again, I don't know where he is, but his timestamp equates to Hawaii Standard Time. Mm-hmm. Minus Torvalds released Colonel 3.10-RC7, and this is what he had to say about it. This is hopefully the last RC in the series, and things have indeed been calming down, finally. So assuming that trend continues, we're all good, which means that we still want more testing and people hollering if there are any regressions, etc. RC7 contains a fairly mixed collection of fixes all over, with, as usual, drivers and some architecture updates being most noticeable. This time, we had media updates in particular. But there's also core fixes for things like fallout from the common CPU idle routines and some timer accounting for the new full NOHZ modes, etc. So we have stuff all over. Most of it happily fairly small. Go test. Linus Torvalds. That was after last week where he was doing that pseudo rant about it being so big. And did you see the news story that was created because of that? Oh, I can't believe somebody picked that up and ran with it as a news story. Linus says Colonel getting too big.
Yeah. I think I think the story I saw had him flip, flipping the bird.
And that was from NVIDIA.
That was from NVIDIA. Exactly. I thought, wow, he looks like he's wearing the same
ago.
Outfit.
Yeah.
So I just
They totally made that news up.
Well,
so,
I think that tends to happen these days because people want to be the first out with something.
Yeah.
So they'll run with it before they've vetted it.
So the main line is at 3.10-RC7. Stable updates. On Wednesday, the 19th of June, 2013, at 3:28 British Standard Time, Ben Hutchings released kernel 3.2.47 with 93 files changed, 1,024 lines inserted, and 306 lines deleted. On Thursday, the 20th of June, 2013, at 12:21 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Crowe-Hartman released kernel 3.0.83 with 11 files changed, 56 lines inserted, and 18 lines deleted. And then on Thursday, June 20th, 2013, at 12:29 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Crowe-Hartman released kernel 3.4.50 with 39 files changed, 478 lines inserted, and 195 lines deleted. And then on Thursday, the 20th of June, 2013, at 12:31 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Crowe-Hartman released kernel 3.9.7 with 67 files changed, 738 lines inserted, and 505 lines deleted. And now, our kernel developer quote of the week comes to us from Greg Crowe-Hartman. He says, PS4 will be running FreeBSD9. Interesting. Yes. Nice to see they didn't just try and roll their own OS again. But Grub 2? That's just crazy. Because they're using Grub 2 as the bootloader.
I saw that.
And what he's talking about is the new PlayStation 4 operating system is called Orbis OS, mm-hmm. which is a modified FreeBSD 9. Some of you may wonder, why FreeBSD instead of Linux? Well, I'll tell you. It all comes down to the license. The BSD license is much freer than the Viral GPL, and that is why it is BSD.
Mm-hmm. And the FreeBSD had their birthday this past week.
They did, 20 years.
Yeah,
cool.
That's right. They're almost old enough to drink.
And that's the kernel news.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
I think we left off with Parted Magic last week. So on the 18th, we have Bridge Linux 2013.06. And that's an Arch-based Linux in four different flavors. XFCE,
vanilla,
GNOME. XFCE, GNOME, KDE, and LXDE.
Yeah, they apparently, I think this version also has a kind of a new
package manager. Yeah, PackOr.
For the Arch user repository, and it's actually a command line tool, which for folks who run Arch and Arch-based distros, they shouldn't be afraid of that.
Right. Yeah, it's probably right up there.
Then it says here that it's targeted at advanced users, as you know, we just were talking about, who want some degree of automation for repetitive tasks. And they go on to say, as such, the user is expected to be familiar with the manual build process. So yeah, it sounds like they'll be doing a little bit of work, but it sounds like a very nice nice utility.
Yeah, very cool. And then next up is SolidXK 2013.06, which that is a Debian-based, Debian testing. And they also have XFCE and KDE. And I always look at SolidXK, and that's like a cool name for an OS, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I always think of...
Now, the name SolidXK, is it because they concentrate on the desktops XFCE and KDE? Is that why it's XK?
And we have a winner. Okay. Yeah. That is correct, they do. But, you know, this release fixed, I believe that they had their Bluetooth, Blueman, that utility, apparently was showing up as in the system tray, whether it was running or not. So it would kind of give you a false impression. So what they did is they have...
made it red and green?
Yeah. That's a no. So what you're going to have to do, it doesn't come pre-installed. You then will install it yourself once you get the distro up and running. And they provide a very easy command. And since it's Debian-based, it's just apt-get install blueman. Well, I was looking in the forums, and somebody says, I need to type sudo apt-get install BlueMan. How do I type without my Bluetooth keyboard? Oh. Is there an on-screen keyboard? And the forum admin says, I'm sorry, but on Solid XK, there is no virtual keyboard. Solid X, there's none. Solid K has one, but that doesn't help you, I'm afraid. I guess I would say probably you want to have a USB keyboard close by.
He's going to have to get a USB keyboard.
And just kind of...
That's like at work, we keep one PS2 keyboard tucked away in a corner.
Yep.
Yeah.
For those servers, we have some really old Super Micros that only have PS2 connections.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Those are old.
I think you can get adapters.
Were those like Pentium Pros?
Yes, Pentium Pro Ds.
Seriously? Holy cow. Wow. That's like, what, clocking 200K
yes.
or 200 meg?
Yeah, yeah.
Holy cow.
So hopefully, I should have joined the forum and just said, hey, you can get a USB keyboard. Try that. But I suspect right. that user probably figured that out already. But he raised a good point. You know, I mean, it's too bad that they didn't install it by default, but that's how it goes.
Yeah.
That's how it goes in the Linux world.
All right. So next up on the 18th, we have Web Converger 20.0, which is a Debian-based distro.
These guys
solely
have
for the internet.
Like every other week or something, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if you think about how many times Firefox gets an update... no, but yeah, it does show up quite a bit on here.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting. I took a look at once you install it, apparently, because their release notes had this big image of the page, the post install page. It identifies your machine because it has the it has that long machine number there, and then. Once you then subscribe via PayPal, and then it'll be customized to that machine, and then you're apparently on your way. So now I didn't have time to try this out, and I'm not sure how much it is. I think it's $10 a month, and that must keep you updated. I don't know for sure, but I suspect that it probably keeps you updated and keeps you in sync with whatever repositories these guys are using. That would be my guess.
If you have to pay $10 a month to keep your OS updated, you shouldn't be running Linux.
Well,
it probably gives you a...
well, keep in mind, this is probably for a kiosk where you're going to be making some money anyway. And
right, or gives you like a management utilities and stuff so you can do it remotely and update
it. It's a subscription,
Yeah.
But it was a drop-down. It shows a drop-down. I didn't test it, again, because this is just an image. So maybe there are various... options available. There must be.
All right. Well, continuing on.
Yeah, because this isn't the Web Converger preview.
We have on 6.19, we have Linux Deepin 12.12, which it's based on Ubuntu distribution with GNOME Shell as the desktop. And it comes with both in English and Chinese, simplified and traditional.
Yeah,
I have to say this. I can't resist. I can't hold it back, and I'm sorry. I apologize up front.
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Linux Deepin. That's what she said.
I'm sure that would be...
All right.
I couldn't help myself. I apologized in advance.
I'm sure, it's too bad that this distro wasn't spun out of Texas, because you could say deep in the heart of Texas.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the clean, way to
clean
it. I'm
not going to touch it. Oh, man.
All right, so. All right.
Lobbing those softballs at me, Mary. I'm not even going to swing.
Okay, well, that's good. But anyway, let's go on and talk a little bit about... this particular distro, Chinese-based distro. I did take a look at the interface, and they've got a very slick-looking interface. They've got something called app groups, which if you take an icon of an application and drag it on top of another, it automatically creates a group. And so you can then have these similar applications grouped together. You can click it. It then opens up and shows you all the individual ones. If you right-click and just say ungroup, then it will just take them and put them on the desktop, I think. Or you could I think there's an option to delete them if you want to, because they're probably shortcuts.
You know,
but
sometimes you just think developers do shit because they can.
Mm-hmm, probably.
What the fuck is the purpose of that?
Well, it's available in Android. You can group all yours together, and you click on it, it comes up, and you can...
Because in Android, you're dealing with a much more limited screen. So it makes sense. Group the icons, then click the icon, then it'll explode, then you click the icon you want. That kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What if you want it on the desktop, so you don't have to go through menu system, but you only want, like, three icons on your desktop?
I keep no icons on my desktop.
Well, Matt, not everybody is you.
That's everybody correct. Should be, damn it.
That's what our email said. But really what it's like is it's as if somebody takes a menu that has submenu items, individual items, and takes it out of the launcher menu and just puts it on the desktop is really all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that you're able to do it, or it's an option, because you don't have to do it, is a nice feature. And again, that just shows how innovative. Matt's rolling his eyes. I didn't know if you were falling asleep or if...
Actually, you're kind of
peppy this morning, Matt.
Yeah. I had a cup of coffee at 4 o'clock.
Okay. Yeah, well, you're staying away from it here. But he is drinking a beer this morning.
Yes, I am.
But it's his happy hour.
It's the end of my day.
That's right.
That's right.
But anyway, I guess we're actually doing our distro review. We better get back on track. So.
Not distro review, the distros.
I mean, of the week.
The distros of the week, right. Now, the next one, I think we're going to need some help with pronunciation on this one.
Oh, I know
not
what
you
mean.
Not you, Tony. Really?
Yeah. Kaisha Magica.
Kaisha Magica?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said that. But that's version 20.
The way I would have gone with it.
And what's funny is in the title it says it's 20, but when you say when it goes to the release notes, it says it's 12.12.
I was going to make that note. I think that they made a mistake on DistroWatch because I went out to the site. I noted that too because... and by the way, Deepin says, so easy that a 12-year-old can use it. And I think it was a take on their 12.12. But yeah, that's a mistake, I think, on DistroWatch's page. It's really 20. I did note that. And I wanted to make a comment, too. They've got a new page from which you can easily install with one-click software packages that have been voted most popular by the community. It's called Magic Box Top Apps. So,
Magic Box Top Apps. Or is it Magic Box Top Apps?
If you throw a comma in there, you can...
Or is it one word, box top?
I believe that this may have been translated by Google Translate. So because
this is a...
it's Portuguese. Yep, that's right. But this version also brings support for UEFI for the 64-bit version of Kaisha Magica only. So, but cool. I just wanted to mention that. Yeah.
And, all right. Are we
moving on?
Continuing on? Yeah.
Yes, we are.
The next one is
we're doing what
released
you say.
On the 20th was Antex 13.1, which is Debian based, with design for older and low specification computers. Antex is based, its code name is Latude,
Luddite. Yeah.
And it's based on Wheezy, Debian Wheezy.
Yes.
Yep.
You know, one of the new things.
No, I used to use Antex a lot with older machines. As a matter of fact, it's what the current laptop that I have running OpenBSD, it's what that laptop ran before it ran OpenBSD.
Mm-hmm.
And it works really, really well. It used to be based on Mepis.
Yes, it did.
And since Mepis basically curled up and went defunct.
No, they haven't.
Come on. When's the last time there was a Mepis update?
Well, they're...
A year at least.
Well, they're not dead.
A year at least.
Yeah.
So...
Well, they're not defunct, Matt.
Defunct as in stale, as in their stuff's getting old. So he switched to Debian. That's when he switched to Debian.
Okay. All right. Which is kind of wild if you think about it, because usually people switch from Debian to something. I mean, weren't you running was it based on Debian? Maybe it was based on Debian Stable.
Seduction. I was running Seduction. It was based on Sid.
Okay, I was just thinking, you were not getting updates frequently.
Oh, that was way back when I was running Linux Mint Debian.
Yeah. Okay.
On DistroWatch says the last release of Mepis was May 5th of 2011. So yeah. It's been 2 years.
Yeah, they're dead.
Anyway, continuing on, we have
yes, Tony.
Slacko, KDE 4.10.4 Live, which Slacko is based on Slackware, live DVD featuring KDE. Maybe that's when you can review. It'll meet Matt's Slackware.
No,
I think I did Slackware already.
You got to do
Slackware. I think, I did a Slackware Live, I thought. By the way, they're using the what's called the Live Kernel 3.9.5, Slackware lives. And they said, you can boot it also through a live network connection using PXE. So, all right. We are moving on to the next one.
All right, yep, the next one is Rosa.
Rosa, it's another one that releases all the time.
2012 R1.
Well, the previous one, I think last week, was the KDE version, yep. And this is LXDE, so. But I'll have you know that my kind of my mini review, I took a look at it in further detail, so we'll be talking about it after we get done. So,
all right.
We'll move on.
And next up on the 21st, we have IP Fire 2.13 Core 69.
Brent says he's hearing some weird heavy breathing.
Yeah, Carl.
Oh, okay.
I think it stopped now. He muted himself.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, back to IP Fire. It's a firewall-based distro for firewalls and routers. And I like it. I've used it, but same thing we've said each time this has a release.
Yeah, but they've got, I think they've changed their cool new features that they integrate now, the online boot service with their traditional CD image. So if you look at the bottom of their boot menu, you've got the opportunity to upgrade, I think, right from it.
Hmm.
It'll try to connect to the internet. Obviously, you got to have internet connection. And then you'll see the menu, the online boot service. So,
cool.
I thought that was kind of nice.
Yeah. All right. Next up is PC Linux OS 2013.06 LXDE Full Monty.
Yeah, you know, I took a look at it. I went to their website, and they characterize this. Now, they've got 32 and 64-bit. The 32-bit wallpaper really looks cool. The 64-bit is just gray, and it looks like this embossed 64. I mean, it looks very industrial. And then they characterize
it's an appropriate wallpaper, in other words.
Well, maybe. but they characterize it, the LXD version, as being for intermediate to advanced users, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know, it just struck me as a little strange, mainly because LXD is usually for, you know, it's a lighter weight desktop for maybe older computers, and sometimes people who are less advanced have the older computers, so...
Right.
I guess I was trying to figure out why they were doing it. They didn't really go into detail why. I just, you know, I thought it was kind of odd.
All right. And the last one on the list for the 22nd, we have Calculate Linux 13.6, which is Gentoo-based, desktop with KDE and XFCE.
Yeah, they're Gentoo-based, but every time I hear their name, I think they should be a Red Hat-based.
Right.
You know, right in there with CentOS mm-hmm. and Scientific Linux.
Scientific, yeah. You know, same thing with me. I that's what I think about.
They got every kind of version. I mean, they've got, you know, they've got their desktop, their servers. They also, you can get the directory server download, which is, you know, provides LDAP services and that type of thing.
And their media center yeah.
which I think is XBMC. Because we talked about this a couple months ago. I thought I did a bit of a review on it, I thought, too. There's been so many, I kind of lose track. But
it's Gentoo-based. Nobody really cares.
But they also have a Scratch server, a Calculate Scratch server, which is a very basic install, and then you can customize it mm-hmm. to your liking.
Cool. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's more like the Gentoo mm-hmm. way to do it.
Exactly.
That's cool.
And you know what I say about Gentoo, right?
We're afraid to ask, but go ahead, tell us.
It's for guys with too much time
on their hands. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's...
All right, and then in the chat, Hevelin says that IP Fire works on Raspberry Pi now.
He thinks.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool. I mean, as long as IP Fire has a ARM, version, then it should be fine.
Which I'm sure they do because it's a firewall router thing. So
right,
I'm sure they're made. They have a version that works on an embedded device.
Yeah. Now I want to go back with. There's a couple of the development releases that came out that I think are really interesting.
Notable.
Yeah, yep, Smoothwall.
I know which one you're going to talk about.
Well, Smoothwall is one of them. It's another IP Fire, or it's like IP Fire, IP Cop. It's a router.
It's distro. Been around longer than either one of them.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time, and it hasn't been updated in years. I think 2006 or something was the last time it was updated.
Some new people have taken over development.
Okay. So it was very cool. Actually, Smoothwall was the first router that I ran.
Smoothwall is what the original IP Cop forked from.
Yeah.
And then IP Fire forked from IP Cop, and now Smoothwall is back in current development.
What a family tree.
And what was cool about Smoothwall is I had, I think, a 133 with 16 or 32 megs of RAM, and it ran fine on that. And that's what my first, like, Linux firewall was. And I'm like, look at this. My wife looked at it.
Oh, okay.
It's a computer.
Yes, but it's doing stuff. You just cool can't stuff. Tell.
Yeah.
Cool
yeah. And the other one was Open Mandriva.
That's the first time they have appeared on the list, and it is going to be very interesting. You have Magia, which, of course, sprung from the ashes of Mandriva.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have Open Mandriva.
It's an alpha right now.
Is that,
yeah, it's an alpha.
Is it
release.
A different distro, or is
it's
it...
It's development.
Is it a name change from from Mandriva?
Magia?
It says it... No, it's a distribution from the roots of Mandriva Linux, and is now being developed by the Open Mandriva Association.
So it's going to be interesting to see, because Magia got its start when people from Mandriva, company...
Well, there was that Russian company that bought Mandriva.
Rosa Labs.
And that's what it says right here. It says this release is based on the Rosa, a Russian Linux distribution project forked from Mandriva in 2012.
Right, because they bought Mandriva, or they bought a majority stake in Mandriva, the company that owned it.
And they have, Rosa, we'll be talking about in a few minutes, but they've done some nice things to it for an RPM-based distro. Huh?
We already talked about Rosa.
All right.
That's my mini distro.
Oh, is it? I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
Okay.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
All right, so at number 5, we have OpenSUSE with 1297.
And trending down.
And number 4 is Ubuntu with 1499.
And trending up.
And number 3 is PC Linux OS with 1537.
And trending up.
And number 2 spot is Debian with 2176.
And trending up.
And in the number 1 spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 2865.
And trending up.
Yeah.
Well, what a surprise.
You know, the more and more I use Mint, I love it. You know, everything, I put it on all my machines now. Except for my servers. My headless servers, I put other things, but I love it.
What do you run on your servers?
I have, on my file server, I have straight Debian.
So do I. I think Debian for a file server is totally the way to go.
Yep. Yeah, no X. I have...
Really?
Yeah.
You don't CentOS?
No, not for a file server.
Really?
Yeah, because SE Linux is too hard and it gets in the way of Samba.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it does cause problems.
Okay.
Unless you really know how to use it.
Exactly, and I don't.
Right. Same with me. Although, I should have gone with Ubuntu... server on for my purpose, because it's not just a file server. I'm using it to serve up media files, and I also want to run, it's running streaming music, and I want to be able to encode video and stuff on it, and all those, there's a lot of library conflicts and stuff with Debian, or it's not available, so I think next time if I reload it, I'm going to go with
Debian?
Ubuntu.
I mean, were you using
it's the latest stable.
Okay.
And anytime I run a server, it's going to be stable.
Sure.
Unless it's just for testing, and then I'll run testing. Mm-hmm. Or if there's something specific that I can't live without.
Okay.
But, yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Well,
I think we're going on to the review, right?
That's right. Yep, I'm going to talk a little bit about Rosa Linux.
Oh, the new guy at work uses Mint.
Yeah.
Lua just chimed in and told me that. I met him. I was in on his interview, but I haven't worked with him.
All right. Well, there you go. More minty goodness.
Well, Eric Joslin, he moved from our department to monitoring. He runs Mint, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what desktop? Is it Mate you use, I mean?
No, I use Cinnamon.
Oh, Cinnamon. I always get that wrong.
Yeah.
All right.
I love Cinnamon.
And I love KDE. who knew? All right.
Carl says, Matt, you just lost some geek cred.
Yeah, I know.
What is it?
The SE Linux gods will forgive me. Eventually.
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
All right, well, this week's mini-review is of Rosa Linux. I've been wanting to take a look at it because I've heard a lot of good things about it. It looks very polished from the screenshots and things that I saw, so I decided to do it. I installed it on the 80-gigabyte laptop, Tony, that I got from you, and I just opted to go across the entire, desk. I didn't do any partitioning. I let the install process do it. Rosa, for those of you who don't know, although you probably heard us say this a few moments ago, that it's an RPM-based distro, and it was forked from Andriva. The install options, now, it's a standard install. It's very, again, very solid and everything, but the couple things that caught my attention during the install, they've got an advanced option that you can disable UUID and just have the standard dev SDA 1, 2, whatever used.
Or you can do it by label.
Or you can do it by label. But I thought that was, I kind of like that in a way, because UUIDs are fine. I understand why they're there. But sometimes it's just easier to know that, oh, yeah, I've got three partitions in there.
Do you know why UUIDs are better than your dev SDA? And
because when they're remounted, they will always, you can set it up so that they will be standardly.
Because the UUID never changes.
Well, that,
right?
Yeah, that's what I meant. The drive number
can change.
Yes.
Right, and I think in Mary's case, it's not going to change unless she replaces that, because there's only one internal hard drive. Mm-hmm. So in a laptop, it's fine to go with that, but in a desktop, where you can swap out hard drives.
Or servers, especially
yeah, servers.
Swap.
Servers, you'd want to use UUID.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So,
but anyway, it provides you with the opportunity to set a root password, which is nice. Again, you don't see that in any Ubuntu-based distro that I've reviewed.
No, but every distro I install doesn't.
Well, of course, because for obvious reasons. And then they had an option. But here's what I really thought was kind of interesting, is they had an option to set your shell. Now, they gave you three. One we know of, Bash. Now, SH, of course, you know of.
It's the original born shell.
Exactly. And then there was one called Dash.
Called what?
Dash. D-A-S-H.
What?
Yes. I had never heard of that. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Okay.
I haven't heard. I've heard of like K-S-H and
CSH. Yeah, corn shell.
No, it's a Bash variant.
It's the Debian Almquist shell.
I thought it was a Bash variant.
It's a POSIX compliant unit shell, much smaller than Bash. It requires less disk space, but also less feature rich. It's a direct descendant of the NetBSD version of the Almquist shell, Ash. It was ported to Linux back in early 1997 and renamed Dash in 2002. It executes scripts faster than Bash and depends on fewer libraries. It is believed to be more reliable in case of upgrade problems or disk failures, and I got that from Wikipedia. I'd never heard of Dash before. I would have selected Bash anyway, just because I'm most familiar with it.
Now, the SH it uses, because the vast majority of Linux machines out there have SH, and they have a bin SH, but it's symlinked to Bash.
Okay.
Now, is it real SH if you choose SH on there, or is it going to be Bash acting as SH?
That I don't know because I didn't go into that much detail. during my research, I found an article on linuxhathaway.net, 13 types of shells some of you have probably never heard about. So I'm going to post that out to our chat
Carl
area.
Carl says it's Bash acting as SH.
Okay. All right. So, but anyway, I did post a link out there to an article that I came across when I was researching that talks about 13 other types of shells that, you know, may be of interest.
Yeah, ZSH. Lua in the chat. Mm-hmm. He's a big ZSH fan. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So once I got it installed and rebooted, one of the first updates I had to do was to update the updater, which I thought was a little odd. But then the second phase of it, I updated the system itself.
That's like Windows. It's like Windows. The first thing you have to do when you install Windows is update the updater.
Yeah, it was. You know, again,
crazy.
Yeah,
crazy talk. I tell you, crazy talk.
Well, I can see the purpose. If there was a problem with the updater, that they didn't find it until after it's been released.
Oh, okay, well, that's not. Yeah, I see that. That makes sense. It must make sense to Matt because he's strangely quiet.
No, Matt rolled his eyes and mentally moved on.
All right. All right. Then it also has the expose style desktop manager. It's called Expo. And what I really liked about it is it sits in the panel at the bottom, the KDE panel at the bottom. And when you move down to it, depending on how many desktops you have, then your screen will fill with those. But it's very smooth, very fluid in how it pops up. You can just select your desktop, and then the others flow back down into the widget. Also, by default, ROSA Linux uses the Home Run program launcher. That's that full screen launcher.
Oh, but that annoying piece of crap is what you mean.
Well,
to say.
I wouldn't call it. I wouldn't go that far. But Matt, I will give you this much on it. I ended up installing the traditional launcher because those are available as widgets, and you can install them. Because
I remember when you told me about it, I thought, "Wow, that might be really cool." And I installed it. It lasted maybe a half a day. Mm-hmm. I couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah,
because it does cover up. I think if you were able to customize it a certain way, maybe. But the takeaway from this is that you got options. You can do the classic kind of KDE3 style, where it's the tiny one in the corner, or you can do the launcher style for KDE4, or again by default it's the Home Run style. Now, there are a couple of things, a couple of unique widgets that the ROSA Labs team developed. One is called Stack Folder. Here's what I like about it, is that it installs as a little folder on the Plasma panel at the bottom, your task panel, and when you click it, it just it will open just to show you the folders that are in, you know, whatever. For example, your home folder, you can click that. You don't have to wait to say open Dolphin and, you know, move into something through there. It's very quick and dirty when you want to get in and grab something and open it. I really liked it. I had a tremendous amount of difficulty finding it. It, first of all, of course, is RPM-based, but I managed to find... Somebody created a deb file for KDE 4.8, and I'm happy to report that it works for KDE 4.10.3, which I think is what I was running. So I'm going to post a link to it. It's a deb file. I installed it, tested it. It works perfectly. The other thing that they've got is something called ROSA Tasks. Now, this is a taskbar that, you know, holds the open programs. What was notable about it is that it has those Mac-like, you know, those kind of thick dotted lines that look like highway lines, just to kind of divide open programs maybe from your system tray contents, that type of thing. On each side of it, it has those lines, so you can tell exactly where your open stuff is. What I have to do here is... the Plasma workspace provides a spacer, so what I do is when I go into edit mode, I pull the spacer and then just put a little divider in there. But I really like the fact that it's clearly delineated in that ROSA Tasks widget. And they also have something called ROSA to Save. Now, this is a feature that enables cloud-based storage and synchronization. Now, the cloud service is provided to ROSA Linux by a company called TooSafe.com. It's a Russian-based company whose website is cute, to say the least. I don't know if I can say that, but it is really kind of cute because when you go down to fun, I'll say, for the guys, you know. But when you go down to the section down below, you'll click these icons, and it will take you down the page. And there's a little rocket ship over on the right, and you click it, and it returns you to the top of the page. It's kind of, you know, clever.
Ooh.
Yeah. But anyway, it uses WebDAV. So what happens then is that folder, you know, you're familiar with WebDAV, it'll look like it's on your hard drive, but it's really sitting up in the cloud giving you access. Now, one caveat, though, is that Rosa to Safe is in beta testing, so they're looking for feedback and comments regarding the service. And on, what I thought was kind of cool is on the sign-in page, there's a little checkbox to disable the KDE wallet, because, on my desktop, every time I open Chrome, the KDE wallet pops up. And I kind of hate that. I suspect there's probably a way to disable it. I mean, I use KDE Wallet for certain things, but I don't like it to automatically pop up. It bothers me.
Yeah.
But they very thoughtfully include a checkbox just to do away with it for that particular item. So, let's see. The updates, when you're updating Rosa Linux, the root password is not required. But if you're going to install something from the Software Center, you do need to provide the root password. So... And that makes a lot of sense, because if it's already installed and just updating, then it should just be allowed to proceed. Other interesting programs, there's something called ROMP, which is the Rosa Media Player. Now, it's based on MPlayer and SMPlayer. What they did, Rosa Labs removed the overkill portion to simplify their product and just reduce kind of the over-the-top, all the controls and all this kind of stuff. It's a very clean interface. Rosa is a very polished desktop, and I think anybody who wants to use an RPM desktop that has some pizzazz to it, and just the fact that it's just well done, should seriously consider giving Rosa a try. So that was my mini review of it.
Well, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, for an RPM desktop, it was very nice.
Why are you busting on RPM?
I'm busting on you, just to give you a hard time. No, RPMs, they're great. I mean, I remember when I first started using Linux, I was using, I think, Fedora Core. It was called Fedora Core at the time. And I would go into that little dependency hell thing where it was an RPM, but then it needed something. And now, of course, all that is very slickly handled in Yum or where.
Right.
And so... It wasn't then, and it was just bothersome. So, but now it's great.
Very cool.
But I still like app-based distros.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so.
I found a new command for RPM.
Oh, yeah?
So you know how you can do you can search and say, what are the dependencies for this program?
Yeah.
If you're using Yum...
Yeah.
There's a way to search and say, tell me the dependents. Like all the programs that depend on this program.
Uh-huh.
Oh, what is that?
It's...
How do you type that? How many A's are there?
It is repo query --, what requires.
Okay.
And then the package.
Oh, that's very nice. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we're going to move on to...
It's time for the tech news of the week.
All right, Mr. Matt, what do you
got? Yeah, I have a couple of stories. First one is really kind of short, more of like a update. We talked a little bit about the Mir controversy last week, so we have a Mir controversy update.
Mm-hmm.
The Mir controversy between Ubuntu Canonical... and the derivative rages on, with 101 emails and counting as of the 19th on the Ubuntu dev mailing list. It all started with an email titled Non-Unity Flavors and Mir, written by Jonathan Rydell.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, the controversy is ongoing.
You know, the same comment I made when you were talking about it last week, I heard on other podcasts, it isn't clear whether they're going to fully drop it or if they're going to run parallel with X and Mir or what's going to happen.
X is done. It might run parallel Wayland and Mir, but X is done. X is done. They're moving away.
All right.
I think they're moving away completely. I think they're going to be solely Mir. Yeah. And I don't know. We'll see. But then next up we have PDP-11 lives on in nuclear power plants.
PDP-11?
The PDP-11, the old PDP-11s.
What? So explain, what is that? I mean, it's so old, I don't even know
it's
what it is.
It was called a mini computer.
Mini computer.
But it was like the size of this room.
Deck Vax. Wasn't it a Vax?
No, it was a deck. It was just a deck.
Not Vax, yeah.
They came with a paper terminal.
Really?
And then you could install a screen terminal on them if you wanted the upgrade.
The upgrade.
So, yeah, they were, it was one of the original computers that Richie and I can't remember the other guy's name, wrote Unix on. But anyway, they're still using them in nuclear power plants. It lives on primarily as a robotic controller in GE nuclear power plants. They plan for it to be a productive part of their power plants until 2050. That's another 37 years, or two generations of programmers. Now that you have closed your mouth after having fallen open, you can go to this, and the link is in the show notes, website to see the Vintage Computer Forum, where Chris Eisel made a post, and she is in charge of talent acquisition at GE Canada. This is part of the job description from her post. I would like to reach out to you to let you know about a fantastic opportunity in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada, for a PDP-11 programmer. The role supports the nuclear industry, who has committed to continue the use of the PDP-11 until 2050.
Holy cow.
20.
Yeah! So, hey, all you graybeards out there that are PDP-11 guys, there's work looking for you.
You used to be a graybeard.
Yeah. I was never a PDP-11 guy.
It says it was released in 1970?
Yes.
Or, what?
Yeah.
First?
It was one of the original computers that they wrote Unix on.
That is crazy. So its lifespan, what they're expecting, lifespan of 80 years.
Yes. They haven't made a new PDP-11, I think, since 83. I think the last one was made in 83.
So where do they get their spare parts?
They probably have 10 of them sitting in the back storage.
Yeah, cannibalized.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, stages. Well, when I used to work for Borders Books doing documentation writing for them, for their IT department.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to use these Sun's servers for the certain program that they used inside their stores that hadn't been made for like 15 years. So it was one lady's job to support these servers and also to go out to the internet and search auction sites to find these old servers.
Sure.
And they would buy them up and keep them in storage for when they needed to replace one of the ones in the stores.
That makes sense. Wow.
But, you know, you'd think that, you know, doing that makes sense. But at some point, of course, Borders no longer exist.
Right.
But for these guys with the power plants, that at some point you're going to need a replacement. I don't know. I mean, you'd think they'd be having like a some kind of development activity going on to replace that. I don't know, but, you know, I guess...
GE Canada's looking for programmers, that's all I know.
All right.
The Carl's asking for the link to that post.
It's in the show notes, Carl. Here, I'll paste it into the chat.
Yeah.
Copying.
By the way, while you're doing that, our live feed is running on a Raspberry Pi. Last week, if you guys were trying to listen in, we had an issue with... The server we were using, K-Wisher, was doing an upgrade. So he hooked up a Raspberry Pi, and now that's what we're using for our live
feed. Our audio stream?
That is cool. That is very cool. Thanks. Also, if you are listening on the audio stream, you'll notice it's higher quality or louder, higher levels, because we're actually using the mics we're recording with. Is the same mics going through the audio stream. And there's an issue with my computer or something. It doesn't allow me to use the same interface for the Google Hangout as mm-hmm. what we're using for the butt stream, which is broadcast using this tool, not actually my physical butt. But.
Really, anyway. Tony? We were surprised by that revelation.
Matt was so busy fiddling with his mic. If he hadn't said that, he would not even noticed it.
Yeah, because it fell off my shirt.
Yeah, Matt has a daisy on his shirt.
It is not a daisy. It is an X.
It's a
stylized X.
There are like four petals in white with a yellow dot in the middle. That looks like a daisy to me.
It's the logo for Knockworks, which is our data center management software.
I had to give you a hard time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Anyway, so that's why it's higher quality on the audio stream. But very cool. And thank you again to Kevin Wisher for allowing us to use it.
Oh, yes. K. Wisher, thank you. So, Matt, I think that was the last story, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what did you do in your time off? You could have written another story for us.
What are you talking about?
Aren't you off during the middle of the week?
Yeah, but this was only... I only had 3 days off this week.
Only 3 days off.
Oh.
He has all those other commitments.
Now, this week I have 4 days off.
All right, we're expecting three stories.
Okay.
Just kidding, yeah. No, but thanks for that. I've got a few links, a few items that might generate some conversation or might not. Stephen J. Von Nichols had a story this past week. Linux, and this is no surprise to us, but Linux continues to rule supercomputers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's out of the top 500 supercomputers in the world. That Linux runs on 95.2% of them. And, of course, following right behind it at probably about 3% is Unix. And then there's a category called mixed. Now, I didn't go in and find out what exactly mixed is, but it might be, well, a combination perhaps. And then Windows is, I can't believe this, but it looks like, here's what is odd. Windows is, looks to me to be right above BSD based. So BSD is not well represented in the supercomputer world. I don't know. And anyway, so I thought that was kind of interesting, and I'll a link to that will be in my show notes. Now, this week, and you probably saw this, Matt, because at first I thought, oh, man, this is going to be a story for Matt. And then another update on it came out, I think, the following day, and that was the MySQL pages.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Did you see that?
I started the research, and I'm like,
oh, my God,
no.
What a story. I know, and I thought about that. And then the next day.
And then there was another update to the update. Did you see that?
I don't know, but I do have something from InfoWorld that says the MySQL mistake is a wake-up call on open source ownership. But what was your update?
The update. And what we're referring to is Oracle claims they inadvertently...
There was a bug.
Inadvertently relicensed the man pages under something other than the GPL.
Inadvertently.
And then they reverted it back once it was brought to their attention. Here's the problem with that story. They reverted the license on those man pages over 2 months ago, and it was just noticed now.
Yeah, I was going to say that happened, that quote-unquote bug happened months ago. I thought they said March.
Oh, it was over 2 months. Well, March would be March. Over 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, so. And so the question in the community now is, was it an accident? Or was Oracle trying to slide it by and hoping nobody noticed?
Right.
So I vote for the Oracle was trying to slide it by and hope nobody noticed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just because I hate Larry Ellison. I hate Larry Ellison almost as much as I hate Steve Ballmer. Almost.
Ooh.
Wow, yeah. That's pretty strong.
So anyway, that... But I once all that shook out and you saw what was going on there, I just thought this article, just as far as the MySQL mistake, you know, again, being a wake-up call, I want to include that link because the author here, Simon Phipps, goes into... That sounds like a great British name, doesn't it? Simon Phipps. Hello, Mr. Phipps. but anyway, he goes into some detail about, the issues that are related to this. The other thing I've got here is, this is from the EFF, my favorite organization.
Your favorite organization? That's a little strong, Mary. You have no other organizations that you would put above the EFF. None.
Mm-mm.
Not the ACLU.
No. They're below it. Because they very much are, they respect the Constitution.
Who does?
The ACLU.
Oh, gee, in your dreams. Don't get me started on that.
No, we won't. Cause
fiasco.
We're gonna, well, veer off topic. No, but I think sometimes they will defend free speech for groups who are, you know, not in agreement with maybe your position or my position, and that's when we don't like them. But anyway, getting back on topic, the EFF came out. They created a new site in light of this whole NSA snooping revelation called prism-break.org. And what they've done here is they have provided, if you're using certain tools, certain programs, certain OSs, they provide you with an alternative that hopefully will be more safe and secure than the current one. You know, clearly if you're running Windows, Chrome OS, or Apple OS X, you can run GNU Linux, Debian, Fedora, Tails, Triskel, and BSD. It goes on. They talk about web browser plugins, web search. DuckDuckGo is there as one an alternative because they did not record the history. Something called Seeks Project, which I haven't tried yet, but there again, this will all be provided in my show notes. Yeah. DNS provider, instead of using Google's public DNS, they've got one called OpenNIC, which you probably have heard of. I think I've heard of it too. I've never used it. And then one called Namecoin, which is distributed DNS based on Bitcoin technology. I have not even looked into that. I'm not convinced about Bitcoin. I just, you know, yet. But then they have something called Darknet. If you want to, I guess, maybe using it after sunset. But Freenet, I2P, Nightweb, etc. Online transactions, instead of PayPal and Google Wallet, they've got some listed. And guess which one? Bitcoin, of course, is listed. Email, it goes on and on and on, basically. I wanted to put that link in the show notes because I thought it was a very interesting set of alternatives. Also, another, and I found quite a few here. Another one is a link, it's a blog link.
Going back to that.
Yeah.
There's, I actually, this week, looked into VPN services, and I'm thinking about buying a Swedish VPN.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you get online, you would get online and then connect to your VPN in Sweden, and then do all your online stuff through the VPN in Sweden, and then there's mm-hmm. no way to track anything back to you.
Yeah. You know, there's also available, you can run Tor on a Raspberry Pi as a router, so that anytime you turn on your computer, it goes through the Tor network.
And following those comments, gentlemen, I have an article from Ars Technica. Use of Tor in email crypto could increase chances that NSA keeps your data.
Yeah, I was going to mention that too. That was next.
Yeah.
Was that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it puts a flag.
Using encryption is a flag, and they store your data longer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Until they complete that data center in Utah where they will be able to decrypt it. Really? You know how it takes like 50 million years to decrypt? So yeah. they'll use parallel processing to shorten it to maybe 10 years.
Although your email, if it leaves your computer, it's encrypted. Uh-huh. Like I use SSL to connect to my mail client, and it's mainly just to make sure my password's encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
But once it leaves that mail server and goes to the next mail server, it's in plain text. So
right. Email is unsecure, and people don't realize it.
Yeah.
People send passwords and sensitive information through email all the time.
You should never send send those two elements, the username and password, in the same email.
Correct. We get a new level one tech in at work, and they always make that mistake, and they'll email someone their password, and then some level two has to jump in and say, be aware, you're not supposed to, you shouldn't email passwords and connection information. Da, da, da.
Yeah, our customers, we have to call them to get it, you know.
And I know with our stuff, we always do it in two different forms of communication. So.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Which the NSA could probably still crack them all, but.
Yeah.
Anyway. continuing on.
Then there was from computerworld.com, or actually the UK version, there's an article that I'll post the link to, and it's how can any company ever trust Microsoft again? And it talks about the back doors that have been built into Windows, again, with the NSA key, so the NSA can get into your computer and take a look around. I suspect we've touched on that topic from time to time, and I don't think it's a real surprise to anyone that that exists.
Right.
But it is kind of frightening and shocking at the same time. I don't know. I mean, it's no surprise, but it still is disconcerting, I guess, to say the least, that there are keys that they can use to get into your computer.
Yeah.
So, well, so who in the heck would use Windows?
No one should use it. They've had backdoors built into Windows since Windows 95B.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, they said more recently there's been concern about Skype, bought by Microsoft in May 2011. In 2012, there were discussions about whether Microsoft had changed Skype's architecture in order to make snooping easier. And they said the company even had a patent on the idea. Recent leaks seem to confirm that those fears are well-founded. So, yep. Anyway, but I'll have a link to that article, which I thought was pretty darn interesting. Moving on, I've got something on the PCBSD front.
Lewis's backdoors doesn't scale.
Okay. on the PCBSD front, they are going to stop releasing for the i386 platform. I think that's 32-bit platform. So in the upcoming releases of PCBSD, they'll only be releasing in 64-bit. So I'll have a link to that for anybody who has interest in PCBSD, such as myself. Let's see, we talked about the Tor one already. And then I'm going to be posting a link in the show notes to that stack folder Deb file. Again, very, very cool.
Yeah, I saw you shared that on Google+.
I did share that. Yeah.
That does look cool.
Yeah, so I've got it on my home computer. Unfortunately, I didn't have time this morning to install it. I was lucky to get my stuff out of Dropbox, as we all knew.
Is there animation when it opens up, when you go to look at that stack?
It just immediately pops open, and it's just it just shows your folders, and then you click it. And something I noticed is that from a recent update, my default image viewer is not Gwen View anymore. It's this, I want to say Photo View or something. It's very stripped down. I didn't like it at first, but now when I use it in conjunction with Stack Folder, it is just boom, fast. And now I'm thinking, I'm going to keep that because I realize that when I hover my cursor across the top, then there's a little row of tools that for, moving forward, moving backwards, rotation, that type of thing that are available.
Cool. So,
yeah. And I've got a couple quick things from the KDE Corner this week. Just a couple quickies. Let's see here. The Plasma. I'm gonna post actually a link to the KDE 4.11 build chart. I thought it was kind of interesting. It looked like spaghetti to me, but they've got all sorts of, items listed and the connections between them all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's very, you got to use your scroller, the horizontal scroller in your web browser to really see the whole thing. So, I'll have that. And, of course, we're all proceeding toward that release of KDE 4.11 on August 14th, and we're going to schedule a release party. Hey, if it happens during the week, Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as it's
Wednesday?
As long as it's Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday.
Yeah, it's, well, they're scheduled to release it on August 14th, which is a Wednesday. Now, barring any...
we can do it on a Wednesday.
Yeah, we should go down to Atwater and
see, and now
have a pizza delivered.
And I get to be the big hero, too, because, 1 o'clock rolls around, I'm still ready to go.
Mm-hmm. 1 o'clock what, a.m.?
Yeah.
I'll be home. I'm sleeping because I should actually take the next day off. No. But anyway, so yeah, so that that's what I've got this week for my KDE Corner.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I had a couple things that I found throughout the week.
No.
Yeah.
Say it ain't so.
No.
I know.
All right. We're ready.
One was 5 things you didn't know you could do in Bash. And I started looking through it, and I actually could only look at one because I decided not to sign up for the website. but it looks very cool. It says it's called Extended Gobbling, which I'm not going to touch it.
Why are you guys throwing these softballs? Why are you lobbing me these softballs?
Just so you can be fun. No, but doing LS, you can
there's
add...
There's not many terms that we can say in your world.
Gobbling.
Well, I've always thought about... Tony. I'm turning your way.
With doing LS, mm-hmm. you can do it... Just straight LS shows you the whole directory. Or, mm-hmm. And then I always know, like, LS, like, *.temp or *.jpg will show you just the JPEG files. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a way you can line a couple of them up. So you can say, I want to just see like JPEGs, PD, or, just your images, and you can give those different extensions. And what I saw in here is you can say, don't show certain ones with an exclamation point in front of it, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
I never thought of it. So if you want to do an LS, but you don't want to see all the backup files and the log files that you may have copied over or whatever in your directory, you can say exclude those with the extra with an exclamation point, which is cool.
I don't know. When I'm using LS, I'm usually using it with the -L. So I get all the permissions and everything, too.
Yeah, but you can still do -L, or I do -LA to show hidden files also. And then you can say, but don't show temp files and this and this and this. Mm-hmm. So it only shows like the, you know, certain ones that you want to see.
And you didn't sign up for the website? Was it just sort of on to get you to go into this website? Or
no, I just didn't have time to.
Oh, okay.
It's like I saw it, I posted it, and then I went to read on, and I just didn't have time to do it. It's at Search Enterprise Linux.
But you'll be posting a link to that, right?
So yeah, we can, and I'll throw it in the IRC right now.
Okay. That'll be good.
And then...
Wow, that's a hell of a link.
I know. Yeah, it's pretty long. It's at techtarget.com, but the Search Enterprise Linux section. And then one other thing I found, which looked pretty interesting, was mm-hmm. it's an app for your phone. It's called Hell is Other People. And what it does is it uses... The check-in system.
I don't care. I just agree.
Yeah.
Say that again.
Hell is other people. It uses uses the check-in systems to help you avoid people, avoid your friends, and it's the anti-social app that helps you avoid running into your friends.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
so if they're calling you, it detects the number.
No. They're checking. You know how you can check in and say, checked in at...
I'm at Starbucks
Louis
right now.
Louis Pizza. I'm at Starbucks.
So you can see where your friends are.
All that so you don't go there and bump into them.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Which I thought it was interesting and funny. And
yeah.
So it allowed you to...
My kind of app, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what I found.
All right.
Well, then I guess we're moving on.
Tools from the toolbox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which Mary brought up this subject.
I did.
You did. It's very cool. You want to talk a little bit about it, how you found it? Or?
Yeah. And you know, obviously, you guys are going to be chiming in. I think it was a couple weeks ago, I came across a list of alt-based commands that you could use in, you know, when you're in a terminal. And I took a look at it, and I realized that by using only a couple of them, I could probably save myself some time when I'm trying to do something that involves a very long file name, or if you know I made a mistake in it, I can go back and easily fix it, or get back to it pretty quickly. So then that I sent that out, and Matt quickly responded, "Well, don't leave these out."
Yeah,
or whatever it was
I said,
to that.
Well, if you're going to do all, what about all the ones that work with control?
See, then I saw that, and I thought, "Oh, he's being a smart aleck." I misinterpreted it. So I said, so then you saw my comment, well, why stop there? Let's do blah, blah, blah. So that's what that was. And then I realized, oh, no, Matt's being helpful.
Yeah.
Shocker. Yeah, caught me by surprise. So what we decided to do, because oftentimes you end up with a list that just kind of either approaches it alphabetically or in some other silo type method, what we decided to do is reorganize them into their purpose. So we've got a...
Now, she says we, but Mary did the reorganization and did a fabulous job of it.
Oh, well. Thanks, Matt. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. But you you also provided some assistance and help with that. You created the PDF.
I did. I just cleaned it up. I cleaned up your excellent work. That's all I did.
So anyway, we've got a section called Cursor Movement, one called Changing Case, which basically, it transitions from upper to lower. We've got something called Controlling Processes in Terminal, and then we've got something called Keyboard Entry. And I don't know, should we go into further detail?
Pick a few out. Like Alt-B will move the cursor forward a word. It'll jump forward a word, and Alt-F will go back a word.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think most people have used Control C, and I'm jumping down to the controlling processes in terminal.
Right, because Control C, we've all had that process that we're like, are you ever going to end? And then, so we just hit Control C to end it.
Yeah.
And even if you're running a ping, you have to hit Control C to stop it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with Control Z, what you do is it doesn't really stop it. It suspends the current command, and then you resume it with an FG for resuming it in the foreground
or
BG.
In the background.
Yeah.
So that you regain control of your terminal.
Yeah, so if it's a particularly long thing, you don't have to stop it necessarily.
Right.
If it's something valuable to you, the output of it will be valuable.
And Control D, which sends an EOF signal, which stands for end of file, which automatically will log you out.
Yeah, I've never used that. So
I use it all the time.
Well, if you're doing mail or if you're doing cat into a file, then the Control D will just stop that because that's the end of the file.
Right.
Instead of it wouldn't log you out at that point because you're in the mail.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the ones that I thought were that I really liked were the changing case ones. And again, those are all Alt commands, which was why I initially found it. And I played around with this. And for example, Alt L will lower the case of every character from the cursor's position to the end of the current word. Alt-C capitalizes the character under the cursor and moves to the end of the word. And then Alt-U capitalizes every character from the cursor's position to the end of the current word. So you can switch it around if, for example, you miss something, you capitalizing it. Usually, sometimes when you get a long distro or you get a very long file name, you've got it and you want to move it or something, sometimes those can come in handy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I like these next few myself because I'm on the command line a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're mouse oriented and graphical oriented, you know how to copy and paste with the mouse, but how do you do it in a terminal session? Well, Control U will delete everything to the left of the cursor. But it doesn't really delete it. It copies it to the clipboard.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can paste it back in with Control Y.
I like that. Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And Control K does the same thing, but to the right of the cursor.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're at the home end of the row, you can do it with Control K. So, yeah. And then moving through your history, Control P will cycle back through your history. Control N will move you forward through your history. And now this one was contributed by our listener, Lua, who is also my coworker.
Mm-hmm.
And Control R will allow you to search through your history in a reverse order, starting with the most recent command going backwards. So.
Very good.
Yep.
I tried Alt Plus without having anything, just from the root prompt.
Yeah.
And it...
it's not a... really a plus sign. You don't enter the plus sign in these commands.
That's like combination Alt and the...
Well, in that one, you may.
Yes.
But that...
Oh, yeah, the
others
you don't.
Do not.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can see that I didn't... for the Alt... Alt-L up there under changing case, it's in there. Maybe we need to clean that up, I think, just so that there's no confusion.
And I also noticed I missed a plus sign.
But you Alt plus, the plus sign is used there,
right.
And then it will give you It says there are 3,000, for me it was 3,397 options. Did I want to see them? and then I had the ability to say yes or no. So do you know which one I picked?
No.
Yes.
Oh, no.
So I had to hit page down, page down, page down, and eventually they all appeared. I just had to see what, you know, what it was.
And there's a bunch of other commands on there. We're going to post this on our website in the show notes as a PDF or as an image. I'm not sure how that's going to work. Tony's going to walk me through it later.
Yeah, I think we should put a little...
What allows you to do this is Readline. Mm-hmm. And this was also provided by Lua. The fact that Bash uses the Readline library makes these possible. Most programs that use the Readline library for their interactive sessions can also use most of these key bindings. This includes SQLite, SMB Client, Python, PostgreSQL, Parted, and more. And when I ran repo query dash dash what requires Readline, I got 375 responses. So there are 375 programs that depend on Readline that that you could use these same key bindings with. So
very cool.
Very useful.
Very useful. Yeah. Excellent. So okay, and that's our toolbox for this week.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
So we have one this week.
We do.
That's exciting.
Is it alive or is it a bash? Now you're probably thinking bash shell, but no, is it a bash as in a negative? During this segment of the show, I challenged Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux distro was alive or dead. Every other week, I twist the concept and challenge Matt and Tony to decide if the named entity is a Linux distro or something else. This week is Twist Week, and I challenge them to listen to a statement about a distro. And again, this is a negative statement as published by, and again, you guys are going to be, you're on your honor, you're not going to go look this up, published by DistroWatch about, it's a negative statement, a con statement, in other words, you know, pros and cons. It's a con statement about this major distro. Again, I'm only using major distro, so I'm not getting some obscure thing and, you know, kind of mucking things up. So you're going to have to determine. I'm going to give you four choices, and you got to identify which distro this was said about. Oh. It's kind of fun. Now, typically I give extra credit if Matt and Tony correctly guess whether the distro is alive or dead. Since all distros this week are alive, both Matt and Tony start with 5 points. Yay. All right. So... you guys ready?
All right.
Yes.
Come on, it'll be fun. All right, this first one, this is DistroWatch's con for this distro. It says, there are some concerns over the developer's ability to maintain the distribution long-term on a volunteer basis. Was that said about Fedora, PC Linux OS, Magia, or Slackware?
Slackware.
Magia.
It was said about Magia.
Oh.
All right, Matt, you're ahead. Now, Max, he's suddenly perking up interest now. All right, the next one. Its resource-heavy desktop setup and graphical utilities are sometimes seen as bloated and slow. Was that said about OpenSUSE, PC Linux OS, Ubuntu, or Mint?
OpenSUSE.
Ubuntu.
It was said about OpenSUSE.
You know, that was the first thing that popped in my mind. But.
Sometimes it's best to go with the first thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not. All right, the next one. Lacks latest Linux technologies. Occasionally the project fails to live up to its promise to deliver timely security updates and new stable releases. Was that said about Slackware, Debian, Arch, or CentOS?
Slackware.
I'm going to go with Slackware.
It was said about Cent, I think, hang on a minute, Cent OS.
Oh.
All right. Here's another DistroWatch statement. Limited number of officially supported applications, conservative in terms of base package selection and complex upgrade procedure. Was that said about Slackware, Debian, or Cent OS?
Slackware.
Slackware.
It was said about Slackware. Both are right. Okay, the next one. The alternative community editions don't always include the latest features. The project does not issue security advisories. Was that said about Mint, Fedora, or PC Linux OS?
Fedora. I mean, no, sorry, take that back. Mint, I meant Mint. I don't know why I said Fedora.
I was going to say PC Linux OS.
It is Mint.
Because they don't issue security updates. They're the only distro I know of that does not issue security updates.
And that was kind of shocking to me when I was doing my... Again, this is based on what was said in DistroWatch. For the major... distro's a term major. All right, here's the last one. Are you leading... he's leading by two. I don't
three.
Think you can...
Three.
Three, yeah. I don't think you're going to catch up. All right, Tony, just fling it out there. All right. What the heck? Just be cavalier about your answer. This distro has no out-of-the-box support for non-English languages, lacks release planning, and security advisories.
Magia.
Was that...
Go ahead.
That was a cavalier fling out. Was that Magia, Slackware, PC Linux OS, or Mint? Was that Slackware. Said about? Want me to read it again?
Yeah, read it again.
All right, this distro has no out-of-the-box support for non-English languages. It lacks release planning and security advisories. Was that said about Magia, Slackware, PC Linux OS, or Mint?
Oh, Mint.
I'll go with Slackware.
It was said about PC Linux OS.
Uh-huh.
So, all right, well, Matt, I guess you won. Yeah, so join us. So join us next week for another edition. Okay, so we're moving on.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line. And that number is 313-626-9140.
Oh, yeah.
We oh, my God.
Yeah, we have a lot of listener feedback. And number one was voice. Somebody talked about us.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't a voicemail, but it was Fab from Linux Outlaws. He said he got to listen to us. And
on episode 314.
Yeah. Yep, 314, which was 314. The last one that was released.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right in the beginning part. He was talking about Google Hangouts and stuff and how he saw us, and it was pretty cool.
Yep, it was. It was very nice. And we also got my favorite email was the one titled, Matt's Wrong.
Wait, we'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
First,
all right.
The very first email we got this week was a comment to our website, and it was from Karma Cedar. Now, I can't tell if this is spam or not.
I will tell you.
It says, chromium is a chemical element which has the symbol Cr and atomic number 24. It is the first element in group 6. It is a steely gray, lustrous, hard and brittle metal, which takes a high polish, resists tarnishing, and has a high melting point.
It was spam. And I'll tell you why it was spam. It was spam because we mentioned chromium, so what these guys try to do is they try to make it look relevant.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, but I saw that, and I laughed when I saw that. But so, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Matt.
And that was from our Ohio Linux Fest show, which was over 6 months ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah, so that's what they're doing.
Now, where's the me wrong one? I don't even see that on here.
Oh, you I'll be happy.
Oh, yeah, I do. Up here, Brad.
I'll be happy to share that.
Brad.
That's right. From
but I explained Brad. Why Brad was actually wrong.
Well, it had to do with the whole Snowden affair.
Right.
And whether he was a traitor or not.
Whether he committed treason. Because treason is the only crime that is defined in the U.S. Constitution.
And charges were filed against him this week. What charges were filed, Matt?
They did not charge him with treason.
Exactly.
Because it's so hard to prove. They charged him with...
Spying?
Espionage.
Mm-hmm. Espionage.
And, but...
He's going to beat that.
The Constitution defines treason as providing aid and comfort to the enemy. And reasonable people can disagree, and I believe that his leaking the information provided aid and comfort to the enemy.
I think it provided, it provided angst and nervousness to us. But anyway, yeah, so that was, and again, I think, I don't know, I think that you could go back and say a whole bunch of different things provided aid and comfort to enemies of the United States.
Right.
But we won't go into that.
And he
that.
Used an analogy, and I explained to him why that his analogy was flawed. So
yeah.
I'm not going to go into any of that. But.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
But I agree with Brad. I still agree with him.
Well, you're allowed to be wrong also.
And then there was an email.
Cheddar also emailed about similar items.
Oh, about Matt being wrong?
Yeah. Definition of treason and...
Yeah. Chatter's allowed to be wrong also.
Yep. And then there was an email from Mary to Matt about the loadable BSD modules. That you can...
Oh, yes.
Yes, you can. Because in our show last week, Matt...
What was my response to that? I did some research on that.
It must be just recently.
Yes. And because it's not, you can't load modules in OpenBSD.
But anyway, because Matt said it was such conviction that I kind of rolled over. Well, only because I didn't really know for sure, right. But it seemed to me, because of what I had seen, that that wasn't quite the case, and it just took me a little while to do some research and find out that you can. So
yeah.
So anyway, so that was an email from Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And from Tom Duchesne.
Oh, Tom. KDE is awesome. Did you see that?
Yeah, well,
posting in Google Plus?
The first one he said was... Our beer bottles are stacking up.
That's right. So I brought my couple more down and the growler down.
Yep,
yeah,
that's right. And then you see that one over to the right of the snowball mic? That was Matt's from this morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
He would have been on his second one by now.
That is my second one.
Yeah, that's second.
Oh, he drank one before I got here. Oh, hilarious. All right. And we got more comments.
Yes.
Leah says that... I think it's a girl saying that she's looking forward to our results about the RetroShare.
Yep, and Brent and I are going to work on that this week. Tony, were you going to try to get
I want to get in. It's just I've been so busy.
Okay,
I
understand.
To, but.
Well, just add that key that I shared. And
okay.
When you can, I think Brent's going to, we're going to try to, excuse me, we're going to try to test it this week.
This is my long weekend off, so I have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off. Mm-hmm. So on Tuesday I might try and install a Debian 32-bit machine along with my Debian 64-bit VM and see if I can get it installed.
Yeah.
It does sound more like a 64-bit issue than, you know, maybe the libraries aren't available or something.
It's real limited. It's an excellent concept, but how useful
is it?
Because
there's
no RPM. I mean, there is an RPM version. There's a repository even, but it requires such an old version of libupmp that it makes it useless.
I suspect, in light of the recent NSA revelations, that there's going to be some further development on this app. But what we're going to try to do this week is test it, and we'll report back next week. So.
All right.
And we got more.
Yeah, there's one from Benjamin Adams. It says he's been listening for the show for about a month now. And has been using Linux since 2000 with Red Hat 7. And he goes on to say he heard about us from the Linux Outlaws show, episode 314.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was also wondering what our day job titles are. So I am a field tech doing desk side support for PCs and printers and other peripherals. But, you know, making sure they can connect to the network and applications and things like that. I do it at a hospital.
I'm an office buffoon specialist. Seriously, I'm a software implementation project manager for a big company.
And I am a data center tech for a local...
For
the best web hosting company in Detroit.
And we can say that because Carl's not here.
He's not even listening anymore.
Oh.
And, and even better than Rackspace when it comes to Magento hosting. So for all your Magento hosting needs, come see us at Nexus. But I work in the data center. I don't work in support for the customers, so I keep the hardware running.
Heavy iron.
Heavy
all
iron.
Right.
Very cool.
No wonder you like heavy metal music. Okay, and we have any more?
There's another one from Paul.
There's quite a few more.
Oh, yeah, about the... that came in...
We were talking about...
Yeah, because he wanted... We talked about that presentation we did for your community association.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're still talking about that. They thought, oh, it's fantastic. I suspect that you may be asked to come back next year. They want to get the word out so that more people show up. But, yeah, it's still being talked about, I want you to know. It was mentioned this week at our board meeting. So thanks again, you guys.
Very cool.
No problem. Anything we can do to help.
Yeah, okay. And then now that you guys have your website up, if you want the files, you know, we email those files out so you can add those to the website for notes and stuff so people can get them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Oh, that's great. I'm going to do that because we're going to, there's a little kind of login member area. And, you know, again, we'll keep that back there for them.
Cool.
All right.
What else do we have, Matt?
We have...
I don't see...
A bunch of people said about that, like Joel McLaughlin contacted us. He's from Tilt. He's one of the Tilt guys. And he really liked our song from last week.
Oh, yeah. I think yeah. That was outstanding.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tony, for finding that song.
That was a cool song. Click on Help.
Yes.
Help someone else. Or freaking Google it yourself.
Oh, and by the way, you sent me a link to something, and he sent it with the, can I Google that for you?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking it was the link, and suddenly it opens up, and there's the cursor going over, and I'm thinking, oh, my God. So, anyway.
Did you follow it? Because then it actually does take you to the Google.
Yes, it does.
Search. Yeah.
Yes, it
and
does.
Kevin O'Brien was another one.
Because I didn't realize until after I clicked it and started watching the video.
Kevin O'Brien also was another one to bring to our attention that... they mentioned us on Linux Outlaws.
Kevin.
Yeah.
And
thanks
Guillaume,
to Fab for the mention.
Guillaume contacted us about Frog Linux.
Oh, yes, yeah. Last week. We talked about the French-Canadian language, or at least the Canadian version of the French language.
Right.
That was on Is It Alive, right? That's where it came up?
Yes, that's when it came up.
Yes.
And, but I appreciated him mentioning that because I had heard that... Oh yeah, it sounds like 16th or 17th century French, but his comment was that it's kind of like how the English and the U.S. Their versions of English. So I thought that was a good way to put it in perspective. So I appreciated hearing that. I emailed him this morning. I think it came in last night, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
So duly noted, Guillaume. Thank you.
Yes, Guillaume's a good friend of the show. He wrote the script. Mm-hmm. If you ever go to our website and want to see the distros, he wrote the script for us that compiles that page. So,
Yep, very cool.
Okay.
And I don't
think we got all.
I don't see anything else.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay.
Featured music of the week.
The music is.
Oh, Tony's got music already.
I do have
for
it
for us.
It's called "The Pain of Life."
The Pain of Life
by Drunken Souls. This is one I heard on Linux and the Ham Shack. They were playing it.
Oh, okay.
And
I thought it was pretty cool. Shout out to them for that, then.
Yeah.
So thank you for making Tony's life easier.
something fills in your tongue beat. What me and you should have let me be. Shouldn't have played with me neither. You should have only one thing. Go away. Wait, is not the feeling that keeps me alive. Hope is not the reason why I should survive. Love is not exactly what deep in my soul. Babe, let me just enjoy my feeling of love.
All right. All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review.
Yep.
This was episode 89.
Supermoon 2, the sequel. Yes.
The sequel. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week.